Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to author G.D. Grace's A Touch of Grace, Literary Magic, on Blog Talk Radio.
Memories of the past, which once haunted my nights and clouded the blue skies of my days, linger not over my spirit any longer, for these days are lived in the glory of colorful shades of new. In the horizon, I can see visions and streams of success flowing constant and in the direction of this life, this better life, full and complete. People of the world, I am your host, GD. Welcome to iArtist Presents on A Touch of Grace. Today's date is March 10th, 2014, and the time is 1:30 p.m. Five senses. Once there was a question. Five shades of gray. You're a great kisser. Raindrops. Original poems by today's guest, Tori Irving. And I welcome him to iArtist Presents on A Touch of Grace. Tori, welcome to the show. How are you doing today, my brother?
Doing pretty good. How you doing?
Well, you know what, Tori? I'm doing okay, but I'm a little rattled because daylight savings time, spring forward, caught me. And if it wasn't for you, if it wasn't for you and I going back and forth, I would have never caught that. You would have been waiting for me to call in, and then there you have it. So the computer, unlike the phone, doesn't have an automatic reset. So needless to say, I'm very happy. It's been a great day. It's been a great week. Thank you for sending me some of your poems. I really appreciate that. So let me find my balance real quick, and I'm finding it now.
Right.
And I'm your Renegade Q, doing a little Tina Turner thing from the movie What's Love Got to Do with It. But first of all, I want to say thank you so much for being on the show. Your poetry is very nice, very intense, and I know that you write a lot about love and romance, which means that you're somewhat of a hopeless romantic. So we're going to dive into that part of your life a little later, but first of all, I want to start from the beginning. I want, for the listeners, for you to tell us a little bit about your childhood.
A little bit about my childhood. First off, thanks for having me. I'm very appreciative, you know, for this opportunity. So let me get that out of the way. So starting from my childhood, I had a normal childhood, I guess. I have a twin sister, two older brothers, and we all grew up pretty close. So and I was the weird outgoing one. My brother's pretty quiet. My sister's, she's pretty quiet. So I was the weird outgoing middle child that got in all the trouble. And I'm sure you can understand that, but I was that child. And so being a middle child, I tried to find my way and try to find any chance to get some attention or whatever. And I tried, you know, sports. I tried many things, and finally, writing seems to. When I was about 15, writing seemed to really just hit with everybody. So, of course, when I'm trying to find that attention, and writing seems to connect with everybody, that's what I enjoyed, because it made me connect with everybody else on a level that I wasn't getting before. So when I can get that attention being a middle child, of course, it made me really love it and really grow into it and want to keep that attention. So that's how I think I really started, you know, writing.
Okay, so you said that you were the middle child, and you said that you were a little weird. What made you weird?
What made me weird is to myself, I was weird because just how I was, you know, I just thought I was weird. I was a lonesome kind of guy that searched for attention everywhere, and I did a lot of things that just anything that would just give me attention. I was, of course, I was a class clown. I was anything that I can find or that would give me the attention that I was looking for. Because my twin is actually my sister, so being the twin of a girl, I think it's a little harder being a twin of a boy, but I wouldn't trade it for the world.
Okay. So what was your relationship like with your siblings as you were growing up?
We was very close, Me and my twin, of course, we had our little, disagreements and whatever. But the good thing about her is, well, I ain't gonna say the good thing about my twin sister is, but she knew she could get away with a lot. I mean, I'll be walking down the hall, and she would just walk by and just punch me in the stomach for no reason at all. And knew she could get away with it. So, and me and my brother, we had our little fights and, typical brother stuff. But, we was all close together. Had a pretty normal childhood.
Now, you mentioned that you were, and this is fascinating to me because I've always been, I'm the oldest. I'm somewhat of the, considered the weirdest child in the bunch.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, yeah, because I loved everything about creativity, the drawing. I really loved drawing, and I loved music a lot. So the thing that fascinates me with you, though, is that you said that you were athletic. So which sports were you into at that time?
I played anything, basketball, football. I used to play soccer. My dad used to play baseball, hit the ball, whatever. But my biggest sport that I love to play, and I still, go to the gym and play hard. Like, I almost sometimes come into blows with people with basketball because I'm so competitive. I'm very competitive. And but that's my favorite sport. That's the sport I love to play. But if I had to nail it down, I would have to admit that football is probably the sport I'm best at. And I hardly ever play it.
That is so interesting to me. This is why I love doing these shows, because I find out so many things about my fellow creatives. Because me, I was terrible at sports, and I was always the last one to get picked in PE. That's why I hated physical education.
Uh-huh.
So when you're talking about the sports that you're interested in and that you like, they're aggressive. Those are like aggressive sports, like you say, almost coming to blows with people.
Yeah.
So.
Okay.
Yeah, so what I want to know is, how do you pin yourself down and get into the zone of being able to create and compose poetry?
It all depends. It depends on, what I hear on the news. It depends on, what somebody tells me at work. It depends on what I see. If I'm driving by, I can see, the clouds in the sky, and I can get inspired by that. It just depends. Like I said, it depends on what somebody tells me, what I hear on the news, what I see in a movie. And movies, that's what sometimes it bothers me, because I can't sit down and just watch a movie. I have to break it down. I have to analyze every single thing. And sometimes that gets annoying, because sometimes I do want to just sit down, with my wife and just watch a movie. But no, I have to break it down. I have to look at shadows and wind blowing and the way the cloud moves and, stuff like that. And sometimes it gets a little weird, but I have to analyze every little piece and break every little piece down. So anything inspires and gets my mind going. And sometimes it's annoying, but it's an annoying feeling that I like to have.
I can relate. It was something that Michael Jackson had said in the movie The American Dream. He told his mother, he said, I've got so much music inside of me that it's overflowing. You remember that?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's exactly how it is.
Yeah. So do you ever find that, before we get off into that, I want to go back. Where do you think this profound creativity comes from? Because when you're talking about the clouds and the tree swing, you have the heart of a poet. Where do you think it comes from?
Honestly, I have no idea, because I tapped into it in early on in junior high. I want to say about 14 or 15. It was hard. It was hard for me because, like I said, I was athletic. So all I wanted to do in high school was play basketball. I didn't care about class. I didn't care about anything. I mean, And if my mom hearing this, I don't want her to hear it, but I used to skip class just to go play basketball. I used to skip Spanish class just to go play basketball. And, you know, I'll say I'm going to the restroom or something and come back all sweaty. But and 1 year, I think it was maybe my freshman, sophomore year, I took an English class. And we started learning about poetry and all of this stuff. So, you know, of course they had us doing assignments. And it seemed like when something piques my interest like that, you know, I'm, you know, my ears perk up. I'm like, okay, what is this? And then, you know, once I took that class and found out what poetry was about, of course I turned it into a game. I wanted to be the best one in the class that had the best poem and, you know, the best story. And everything I do, I turn it into a game. And it's annoying to my wife, and I'm sure it's annoying to everybody that knows me, but everything I do, I turn it into a game that I have to win. Mm-hmm. So that's what I did in, you know, in an English class. And that's how it started. I had no clue. I had no clue about, you know, what poetry was growing up. I had no idea what it was.
Mm-hmm. Well, just out of curiosity, because I know that you're athletic, or I should say we now know that you're very athletic and you also do have the heart of a poet. So you had mentioned that you like movies. What is your favorite movie?
My favorite movie is The Notebook. And it's The Notebook. My favorite all-time movies, genre-wise, is, of course, chick flicks. I love romantic movies. For some reason, I just think. So put that out there. I love those kind of movies because it gives me inspiration because I like writing about love. So, of course, if I like writing about love, I'm going to watch love movies and romantic movies. So, and I, you know, I break all of those down. I break down the feelings, emotions, everything. So those are movies I love. But I really love The Notebook.
Mm-hmm. And what was The Notebook about?
That was about, it was about an old couple, and the older woman, she had a disorder or a disease or something where she couldn't remember anything. And the guy, her husband, he wrote a book about it and end up reading it back to her, you know, reading back the story of their life together back to her. And once he read the story, it'll make her remember everything that happened. And so that was just, you know, of course, me being the kind of guy I am, that made me just like, wow. And it was everything about the book that, I mean, everything about the movie that just, it explains the kind of guy I am, basically. You know, what I like to do and what I think about love and romance and, you know, et cetera.
You know, I think that,
and
that you're an incredible...
And, of course, they end up together in the end and, you know, happy ending. I love happy endings, so...
Well, that's cool. You know, you're an incredible spirit, and I believe that what makes you even more incredible is that you are a very physical, very assertive type person. But you are not afraid. There's no fear in you when it comes to writing about beauty and acknowledging beauty in film. Because when you mentioned, you know, chick flicks, I live in a sober living house and I live with a bunch of guys, and those are my type of movie, you know. But for you, what about them do you find so appealing?
Well, first off, like you said, I'm not, you know, afraid to say. Those are the kind of movies I like. Anybody that knows me knows what kind of movies I like. They know what I like to talk about. But they also know what I like to do. I like to play sports. I like contact. I like all of that stuff. So, but the thing about romantic movies, to me, me personally, I love to see women smile. And I love to know what makes women smile. I love to know what makes them happy. I love to know what makes them feel like, you know, they are queens. I love everything about women. So, of course, if I love everything about women, I'm going to, you know, delve more into, you know, what they like. And they like, you know, romantic things. They like soft, sensual type stuff. Not all the time. Sometimes they want you direct. Sometimes they want you to go around the bush. And then they like imagery. They don't always want you to come out and say, this is what I like. They want you to go around, you know, every single thing, and they explain it in different ways that they can understand. So everything is not just straight and direct, you know, with women. So you have to find different ways to get in that heart, get in that spirit, and that's what I like to do. And I believe, you know, watching romantic movies allows me to tap into that.
Mm-hmm. And so that's interesting when you say that your understanding of women and your compassion for the emotional beings that they are, I think that that is one of the main things that really drives any creative spirit to be able to write about something, an object, meaning a hill full of grass or a meadow that's full of flowers. You know, I think that it is a sincere fearlessness that allows you to present this to the world. And so the question that I have for you right now, do you remember the very first poem that you wrote?
Oh, wow. The very first poem that I wrote? Not the very first, because I had a notebook full of, you know, my early poetry, and somehow I lost it all. And to this day, I regret that I, you know, didn't keep a better eye on those poems. But I do remember one. I'm not sure if it was my first. It was about, and this may sound weird, it was about, you know, two ships. I remember writing about two ships. And, of course, I love imagery, so it was imagery. It was about two ships, and one being the love I was with and one being the love that I would love to be with. Mm-hmm. And to my memory, I think I was either playing basketball that day, and I had, of course, got scratched up and bloodied up, and I remember putting a drop of my blood on the paper of that poem.
Ooh, that's heavy.
And yeah, and it was pretty deep, and I remember, like I said, I remember it being about a ship, and I remember feeling about, you know, two different women, one with, you know, the one I was with, and one that how I felt about love, because you can love somebody and not be in love with them. And so the emotion tied to that was I was loving somebody, but I had this feeling about another ship that I was actually in love with. And, you know, I was talking about the waters and the waves and the ripples and how they move and, you know, all this stuff. So that's the one that sticks out to me in my early poetry.
You know, I think that's intense what you just said. This is why I love doing these shows. It's so fascinating to me what people will share. I mean, that is an intense move right there, the drop of blood on the paper. And what did it signify? What was the significance of it? And was it something that you really thought about doing that you said, okay, this is what I'm going to do? Or is it something that just came as you were writing?
I think it's something that came as I was writing. And honestly, that's the good thing about, you know, childhood, because the innocence and the free will and everything that you just spill out and just come, whatever you think about, you just do it. Now, knowing, you know, that you write, you think so much about editing and it's this, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that.
Yeah.
But, you know, when you're young, you just spill everything out. Whatever comes to your mind, you just put it. And I looked down and I said, I saw my blood. I said, I'm going to put my blood on this paper. I'm gonna put, and that has so much meaning. I'm gonna put my blood on this paper. So me saying I'm gonna put my blood on this paper, that meant, you know, in a physical sense, of course, I put my blood on paper. But in a mental mind of young Tory, that meant, you know, I'm gonna put everything out there. So I put the mental part out there, and I put the physical part out there, so it can all tie in together.
That's it. Again, I tell you right now, I'm gonna think about that one. I'm going to think about that one long after the interview is over, because I've never heard that before. And, you know, that's the one thing about artists, you know. A true artist doesn't follow, per se, someone. They actually have people that they admire. But for the most part, that they're on their own. If you're meeting the credible artist, they're really about their own individual traits and qualities as they soak into their artwork. So the question that I have for you now is there a poet that inspires you?
There's a poet that inspires me. Well, Langston Hughes always, you know, inspired me. That was probably, and I do believe if my memory serves me right, I'm going on 32 years old, but if my memory serves me right, that was probably the first you know, poet that I've read, you know, when back in an English class, and that really just got me into it. It was Langston Hughes and Walt Whitman, of course, and if you saw The Notebook, you know they recite some of Walt Whitman's poetry in there.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, I'm just like, okay, I'm in heaven right now. So, yeah, so Langston Hughes and Walt Whitman.
Okay, that's great. So do you know how many, off the top of your head, how many poems you've written in your life, including the ones that you lost?
Oh, my goodness. off the top of my head, because, you know, I do, you know, some of the stuff on, you know, that you see on Facebook where I'm just, at any given moment, I can just write, you know, quick eight lines and hundreds. I have to say hundreds, including the ones that I lost, including the ones that I didn't even write down, including the ones that's on another computer hard drive somewhere. It has to be hundreds. So,
wow, that's amazing.
To me, it gets so easy for me to write. It depends on the kind of mood I'm in. You know, somebody can say something about wine, and then I can say something about, you know, me tasting, and it depends on what mood I'm in. Like I said, anybody can say one word and it can inspire me.
Okay, so speaking of inspiration, what I thought would be great, there was another guy on his, he calls himself the greatest poet alive. He actually requested to read one of his poems. So during this broadcast, I want you to read at least two. And I would like you to read one now, and so that the people that are listening right now can get a true understanding of just how gifted you are. So do you mind reading Raindrops?
Raindrops, no, I don't mind at all. Let me make sure I go ahead and pull it up.
Okay.
And Raindrops, I don't know what inspired me, honestly, to write it, and I'm pretty sure at the time I saw something, or I looked outside and saw the rain, or I was thinking about something. So I was, and a lot of my poetry, a lot of my writing, I do while I'm at work, which is weird. But this one here is called Raindrops, and it uses a lot of imagery and metaphors, which is, you know, something I like. I'm in love with tasting raindrops, especially the drops that find resting places along the windows. I like to make it rain so I can see my baby's raindrops land and create streaks as they fall into my dehydrated opening, creating a puddle of creamy decadence. I love to make it thunderstorm so I can lie excitingly beneath her beautiful sky, catching mouthful of raindrops at a time. I love to grab her clouds and hold them tight while my fleshy, muscular, gritty, begging organ that reside in my mouth and that was erected towards the heavens while twirling twister light inside her erotic, tasty atmosphere kept the rain coming. After her storm, raindrops clung enjoyably from the place that she loved the most, the place that she loved seeing raindrops, my wood, her home. The sun was setting in the horizons, trees breathed like the elevated pastures in the motherlands, and off in the distance from the chirping birds and the gorgeous butterflies that pranced and danced around the dandelions that I hear raindrops fall on, stood a beautiful woman with curly hair, tied in a ponytail and being held with one hand so she can enjoy removing the raindrops that reside on her home, my wood. Have you tasted your lover's raindrops?
Wow. Woo! Man, oh, man, oh, man. So this is the question that I have for you. That's pretty slick. I like that. And I ain't going to even ask certain questions about this poem because it's very much... It's very much erotic. It's very beautiful. It's very beautifully written. So did you write that before marriage or once you got married?
After marriage. I've been married going on 2 years. It'll be 2 years at the end of March, March 31st. And
congratulations.
That one I wrote probably a few months ago. And honestly, my writing has gotten a million times better since being married, because you get a different feeling and you imagine, you know, your wife or, you know, whoever writes or their significant other, you imagine that you're talking to them. They're giving you this another feeling that you didn't have before being married. So being married has just, you know, elevated my writing to a whole new level. And, yeah, so that's where that comes from.
Yeah, you actually do grow. So let's talk about the places where you write. Now, you mentioned to me that you wrote at work, and that's one place, you know, I used to try to write at work, and, you know, you get so off in a zone that to be interrupted is almost like somebody going to get their head snatched off. So that's why I had to stop doing it. But is there a place where you go? Because there was a woman who was on the BET Honors. She was a poet, and I can't think of her name. No. She actually was a photographer. And she mentioned that as artists, we actually can be very selfish with our time, because if we have a love, a physical love in life, then we have this other love, which is our art, that pulls and tugs almost just like another human being. So how do you find time to actually write this?
And that is so true. Like, I'm getting chill bumps right now from hearing that, because that is so true. You have your physical love, and your writing is almost just as identical to a physical love, because you want and need that same type of feeling, same type of emotion from what you write, you know. And Erykah Badu, she say, you know, I'm an artist, I'm sensitive about my shit, and that's so true.
Yep.
Because you're so sensitive about everything that you write, and if somebody don't give you the reaction that you're looking for, you feel like, or I feel like, it's not good. So I write looking for a reaction out of someone. So, and, you know, I went on like that. Can you repeat the question? Because I went on talking about, you know, what she said, and it was just, that just hit home with me.
Well, no. It's like, do you go to a place? I mean, you were fine. Do you go to a – so we already know that there's an understanding that when we're in our mode that, you know, the art can pull us a certain way. So where do you go to write? Is there time that you allot for yourself to, especially with a father and you have a wife, is there some place that you go to in the home or wherever to compose your poetry?
Now, no. And which is weird. You was, and that goes back to me being weird. Of course, I'm backwards. Now it's on impulse. I write whenever I get the feeling. I write, and me being competitive, I write better when I have a deadline. So I write, you know, in my little writing area. But back then, you know, in my single days, I used to go to school in El Paso, and there was this big ass mountain. There was this big mountain.
Okay.
And I used to go on top of the mountain, and I got a lot of writing done, because me, I love the visual part of it. I love looking over everything and seeing the sky and seeing everything below me and how it moves and how it flows when the wind blows, or how it looks when, you know, it's sunny, or how it looks when it's rainy, or how it looks when it's snowing. I love everything about that, and me being on top of something, being able to overlook it all, I got a lot of writing done that way. And me now, you know, being married and having two girls, I write on impulse. I write when I have a feeling. I write when I have a thought in my head. My wife can say something. I can see something on TV. Even my daughter can do something, and I can, you know, turn it into something. So I have, you know, my workout area, and I have my writing area in the same place. And if that's where I go to write. You know, if I'm challenged, if I have a deadline to meet, then, of course, I'm going to turn it to competitive. And I go and I do my little area, you know, my little area, and I write. Or if I'm at work, I write there. Or if I'm in the car, I'll turn on the recorder and I record something.
So let's talk about love, okay, because you like writing about love, and you have a beautiful wife. Her name is Shelba. And she is very supportive of you, which I think is just great. So when did you guys meet?
We met in April of 2011. Yes, 2011. April of 2011. I met her through her best friend at work that I used to work with.
And did she know that you wrote poetry?
I'm not sure right away, but I want to say her, I'm pretty sure her best friend told her, you know, I'm pretty sure of that.
And so what was her reaction once she found out that you were a poet?
I want to say she was shocked and overjoyed at first. And then she started seeing, you know, the erotic stuff. And then I'm pretty sure she became worried. And then she became, you know, pretty used to it pretty quick. So, but because I have different, you know, facets and different subjects and topics that I write about. So when she saw how broad it was, I write about love, I write about sex, I write about romance, I write about death, I write about pain. And so when she saw all the different subjects and, you know, how far I can, you know, go out into, it made her understand that, okay, he's just not some guy that's talking about sex all the time. You know, I have different emotions and different feelings and whatever. So she understood then.
And so do you ever recite poetry to her?
Do I recite poetry? Actually, have I recited poetry? I believe I've recited poetry to her before, and she always gets a little girly face and, you know, shy. And really, I'm the one that's like, okay, let me go ahead and get this out, because I've never been to a place where I recited my poetry. You know, I've always been, you know, self-conscious about that and self-conscious about my voice when it comes to reciting poetry. And it's weird, and she always, you know, encouraged me to go out to, you know, one of these poetry clubs and start reciting my poetry. She's always been, you know, pushing me to do that, and I haven't done it yet, but I keep telling her I'm trying to get, you know, okay with my voice and how it sounds, because I'm this athletic dude, deep voice, and to me it just don't, sometimes it just don't sound right, so I'm trying to get used to that, but to her it sounds perfect.
Well, and that's because she loves you.
Yeah.
That's exactly what that is.
Also.
Yeah, yeah, she loves you. And you know what, you do have a way with words, and that's the one thing about an artist, you know, and be it writing a song, which I love the late Tina Marie, because she was, there was this one thing that Tina Marie said. She goes, beckoning the kiss that I wish I could try out on myself to see if it was good enough for your lips. And I was like, what did she just say? I had to, like, play it back, you know. And I've just always been drawn to that. So I wanted to go ahead. First of all, I asked that question because Shelby was so supportive, and I just wanted to go ahead and give her a shout-out on the air and thank her for supporting you. So what I would like you to do right now is I would like you to read another poem. And this is your chance. This is why I wanted you on the show, because I wanted to make sure that that I could be a part of your growth and your exposure. So I would like you to read You're a Great Kisser.
Oh, wow. Okay. All right. This one, of course, is You're a Great Kisser. Splash waterfalls were present when the parting of my lips gave way to allow my tongue to introduce himself to her pink lips. As soon as I tasted her joy, I can hear the sounds of approval from her. Sorry, I had to come up from air. I heard sounds of her approval from the panted moans that escaped her breath. As soon as the spread of my tongue danced inside her, she rewarded me by allowing her scent to be clung to the tips of my lips, while my hands put indents in her hips. As I continued to French kiss her essence, she arched her back and smothered herself with the pillow. And as I finished my introduction, I heard what sounded like waves clapping against the riverbanks. It was her, eyes possessing an orgasmic blink as she panted out the words, "You're a great kisser."
I like that. Very cool. Very cool. So let's talk about your work and where it is right now. Now, I know that I read someplace where there is a book of poetry. So has your book of poetry been released yet, or is that something that you're still working on?
Love Rescue actually been released. That was my first book, and I'm working on another one, Love Rescue Part 2, which, you know, includes all of these poems and, you know, small little nightcaps that I call. And they just, you know, some one-liners like, for example, I have drawn my heart in the sand many a time. Patience helped me understand that it took time for the waves to deliver it to someone who would appreciate it. And there I thought it kept getting washed away. So it includes little quotes and, you know, little paragraphs like that. And that's what I'm working on now.
Mm-hmm. I like what you just said. That was so cool. I love the beach anyway, and it just, you know, billows from you like a smoke from a chimney. And so your favorite topics are, you know, we talked about raindrops and we talked about you're a great kisser. Your favorite topics are really about love and romance and sex because they're part of being human. So what about those topics intrigues you so much?
It goes back to what I said earlier about making women happy. So if a woman feel happy mentally, it's easy on my job to make her happy physically. You know, mm-hmm. in a boy's mind, he's going to think to make her happy, it starts with a physical mind. In a man's mind, you know, in a physical sense, in a man's mind, it's gonna start mentally. If you can get her, you know, climaxing mentally, the physical part is easy because with women, it starts in the mind. It starts in the heart. It doesn't start with the body.
Mm-hmm.
So,
Go ahead.
I was gonna say with women, it just starts, you know, in the mind. So with me, I love talking about love. I love talking about sex. I love talking about, you know, making a woman feel like she's the best, like she's the queen. And, you know, I love when a woman feels that way. I love when a woman feels like she's the queen. And that starts with my wife, my sister, my mom. I love seeing smiles on their faces. And if I'm out, I love seeing women smile. And sometimes I got to kind of reel that in because I want women to smile so much. I want them happy so much. But in the actual world, it's not always like that. Some people can take this the wrong way, so I got to sometimes reel it in.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So have your parents know, is it just your mom or is it your mom and your dad?
Oh, it's my mom and my dad.
Oh, that is so cool. Have you read any of the poems to them?
Have I read? My dad, he's seen some of the poetry. He has my first book, Love Rescue. He's seen some of the books, but I haven't, you know, physically read them to him. My mom, I'm pretty much like the male version of my mom. She's crazy, weird, just like me. So we can talk about stuff. And that goes back to, you know, me being weird. But there goes, she's like the female Tory. We can talk about sex. We can talk about romance. And you'll see her on some of my stuff. She'll be like, Tory, I want more. I'm like, Mom, you my mom. You're not supposed to be saying that. But she's like the, you know, the female Tory.
You know what that is? I think that is just so cool that your mom and your dad, you know, take part in your art, you know, because it is something. It's something that comes from God. I mean, not many people could sit on a hill and even be concerned about which way the wind is blowing or how the trees sway in the wind, less known, you know, to be able to write about them. So you have everything. You have all of the components of a great poet. And I can't wait to see you stretch those wings, like your wife said, and to actually go ahead and step in front of the mic, because you'll find it, you know, the more interviews you do. And this broadcast is actually going to be recorded, so it'll give you an opportunity to go back and listen to your raindrops and you're a great kisser until you formulate, you know, what that stage presence is going to be like for you. So let's talk about Dr. T Chronicles. And I'm going to try to pronounce this, Ocular Deception and Love Rescue. Is it finished right now?
Dr. T, Ocular Deception, that is finished right now. That's been out probably, one would say, a little over a year or almost 2 years. And Love Rescue has been out for, that was, like I said, that was my first book that came out. And I was, of course, overjoyed about that one. And Dr. T Chronicles, I self-published myself, and I'm working on part two, and I just finished a manuscript for a book that I wrote that the notebook inspired me to write, believe it or not. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say the The Notebook inspired me to write that one because, you know, me being an African American, I wanted to incorporate, you know, black love and, you know, how it relates to us as a people. And so with that one, that's my baby, actually. That's the one that I've worked on, and, you know, that's my baby. The sex and the romance stuff, that's easy for me to write. It's easy. Mm-hmm. But what I had to do with significance of insignificant love, that's, you know, what this book is about. That one I had to, you know, deep dive into and find emotions and do a lot of research on that one. So that's my baby. That's the one I'm really excited to put out.
Mm-hmm. So that involves character development, I would assume.
Yes. Yes.
Uh-huh. Yes. Yeah, and it's almost like natural. You know, I started writing songs, then I started writing I read a book, and then it inspired me to actually, but I could never, ever finish the book. So this being your first, and I want you to know that you do have an open invitation once the book is finished and it's ready to be released to come back to A Touch of Grace so that we could go ahead and talk about that and find out where you've gone on your journey. So then, to me, that's like the biggest thing is to – I remember there were a couple of artists back when the show premiered on 2010, and they've come so far as writers. One of them has like about 5 or 6 books out now since the time.
Oh, wow.
That, yeah. So it's incredible. So I definitely want to have you back on once you get in touch with me and let me know that it's ready for release, and then we'll talk about what that experience was like, because poetry versus writing a novel, you know, it's a totally different experience. And so how far along are you with the manuscript for the book?
With Significance of Insignificant Love.
Mm-hmm.
That one is, I'm done with that manuscript. Actually, it has to go through editing and, you know, rewrites. And so I'm done with that one, and I had a deadline to finish that one. And once I was tuned in, I wrote almost 2,000 words in one day. That's how tuned in I was, you know, with that book, because when you reach a certain level and reach, you know, a certain feeling inside, it seemed like it just spill out. And I can't really explain it, but it seemed like it just spill out, you know, onto the paper, or if you write in or type it, it just spill out. So that one, I need to, you know, go ahead and get it edited and get it out, because that's my baby right there.
And you know what? I like when you say that, because they are, you know, they are our babies. We give them birth, you know, from a divine place that the words come. Like you said, you pumped out 2,000 words. The very first book I wrote, I actually had people following me on a blog. You know, and I was pumping out like 3 and 4 chapters a night. So it's definitely an incredible experience. So the question that I have for you, that once you started releasing your work, have you had a chance to interact with fans of your work yet?
Fans of my work, yes. And with the Dr. T book, it was crazy, because, you know, I had to somehow, let me see how I put this, I had to let people know that I'm not Dr. T, you know, because Dr. T is somehow, I'm pretty sure you can kind of consider it, an extension of me, because I like for women to feel like, you know, queens, and I like for them to feel happy, and that's, you know, what Dr. T does. He just does it more in depth. He goes into the physical thing of it. And so when they read that and they see how Dr. T is and they see what Dr. T does to these other women, they somehow seem to automatically associate that with me. So when I'm at work and I'm thinking about, you know, promoting my book, sometimes I'll just sit back and I'm like, okay, will she be able to handle it? Will she be mm-hmm. able to handle it? Sometimes I don't tell everybody, but I'm like, I get to go on and like, hey, yeah, I got this book. You should check it out. And then, are you mm-hmm. Dr. T? No, I'm not him.
What does that feel like to you when they come back to you and ask you, what's that feeling like for you?
At first, it was a little weird. I had to admit, because I like to write that stuff, and I'm in a way I'm kind of shy, you know, when it comes to that, because it's easy for me to sit back behind the scenes and put all the words on a computer, but when it started coming out into the open and people started, like you said, when fans started coming out and being like, Tori, is this you? And I started getting certain reactions. It was a little weird at first, but, you know, it was flattering also, But it seemed like the timing of when that started happening and when I got married seemed to coincide with each other, so it was really weird. So I'm like, okay, I'm getting this reaction, but I have my wife right here. Okay, this is weird. So, yeah.
You know, it's great that you think about that, and I, that's why I was curious about what that experience was like, because, you know, you had singers like back in the day, like your Teddy Pendergrass or your R. Kelly's or your Usher's, you know, and they have all of these screaming female fan base. And because the creativity comes from inside of you, you know, there are people that are actually drawn to it, and they actually concoct whatever in their own mind. You know, so it makes, you know, it the spotlight. It's the question that I have for you, because I'm definitely sure that one of these things is going to hit big. You know, have you thought about what life is going to be like for you when you're in the spotlight?
I haven't, and I joke around my wife all the time, because honestly, I feel like if you can't joke around with your wife or tell your wife what you thinking sometimes, then, you know, it's, you just have to be that way. So I'll see somebody on TV, let's say Megan Good, and I'll be like, oh, baby, if ever I get in Hollywood, you have to be with me every single place I go. So, but, you know, I can tell her that, and she'll know I'm just messing around, but I haven't just really thought about it, and I'm pretty sure it'll be weird at first, but with me and her, nothing to happen. It's just, you know, me just talking right now.
That's a good thing. And so this is a question that I have. Writing is a very powerful gift. Very powerful gift. Have you ever wondered why God gave that gift to you?
Honestly, I do it all the time. And sometimes it's a curse, because being able to write can sometimes hurt. It can break your heart. It can do all these things where you put all these feelings out, and it goes both ways, because you can spill out your most intimate feelings and not get the reaction from others that you're looking for, and it can hurt like hell. You know, when you put all this work in, when you know personally, when you feel it down in your heart that you know you put everything that you had into a single piece of work, and to not get a certain reaction from maybe people that's close to you, or not get the, for people to just to understand, or that can hurt like hell. So sometimes I believe it's a curse, and something sometimes I rather push away, but I don't. It's like I want to push it away, but I keep it. And it's because sometimes it's a bad feeling that you get being able to do these things and being able to spill all your emotions out that can help somebody else, but in turn hurt you the same, and under the same breath, it can hurt you. But the reason that we do it is to get it out ourselves, and maybe that it can help somebody else. But like I said, in reverse mode, sometimes you can get it out and it can hurt like hell. So right. I wonder that a lot. You know, I wonder that a lot.
Yeah, you know, and I, it's incredible. It's funny that you say that it can be a curse sometimes, because sometimes I felt like that too. Sometimes you can't cut it off. You know, sometimes you're so wrapped up in it, and you could read, and sometimes it is a lot of emotion that is channeled outside of that. And then when you're laying down to go to sleep, it's still playing around in your head. You know,
yeah.
And it is hard to cut it off. So for the listeners listening right now, because I'm going to ask you two questions. I'm definitely going to ask this other one, because I just love to hear what guests say. Okay, so the very first one is, where can your books be purchased?
They can be purchased on any book site, Amazon, Barnes & Noble are the big ones, and I have a website myself, www.drtseries.com, and you can order it there, and me personally can send it to you, you know, autographed and all of that good stuff. So it can be, there's plenty of ways to be able to get it.
Okay, that's great. Okay, so now here's the question. Okay, how old are you right now?
I am 31.
Okay, 31. Okay, so we board the time machine. We get in it. You go back in time to 7-year-old Tori. What advice would you give 7-year-old Tori? Yes. What advice would you give 7-year-old you to equip him for the journey he's going to be going on?
To be honest with you, I would ask 7-year-old Tori for some advice. Seven-year-old Tori was more outgoing. He didn't think too much, and sometimes that's my problem. I overthink. So me personally, I would ask 7-year-old Tori for some advice, and I'm not just saying that. I really would. And 7-year-old Tori would just tell me, Tori, stop thinking. Just go ahead and do it. You think too much. Just go ahead and do it because just do it. Just do it and be done with it. Because once it's done, it's done. You get whatever reaction you get. So, honestly, I would ask him for advice.
That's pretty cool. I like that. That's a cool answer. I'm going to keep asking that question because I just like to hear what people say. So, now, we have a couple of callers. Do you feel like taking a call?
Sure. I don't mind at all.
Okay. Well, let's do it. Okay, caller 817-308, you're on with GD and author, poet, Toi Irving. You have a question?
Yes, I'd just like to say I'm so happy to hear my husband on your show. This is Shelba.
Hi, Shelba.
Hey,
how
baby.
Are you?
Yeah, I'm just so glad that you gave him this opportunity, and I hope it provides so much more exposure because his work is so amazing.
You just got the sweetest voice. So this is a question that I want to ask for you. What advice do you want to give him on the air?
Just never stop trying. And maybe think about your writing as more of a blessing, especially when it comes to the comfort that you provide. When, you know, family members are lost and other such things, because those are some of the things that really stuck in my head about your writing.
Thank you, babe.
Wow. That's pretty cool. Thank you, Shelba, so much for supporting your husband, the artist. Thank you so much. And thank you for listening to this show. What do you think so far?
Oh, I really have enjoyed it. Hearing all his different thoughts, some of the things that I didn't know myself. So it's been eye-opening for me.
Well, that's great, and it's being recorded, so you could always go back and listen. So I want to thank you for tuning in, okay?
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. We could try to take one more. Let's see. Caller from 760-262, you're on with GD and author poet Toi Irving. Do you have a question?
I don't have a question, but I'm calling in to support my cousin, Tori, and Shelba as well. He's been doing great things. His poetry, his writings are off the charts, and I'm really happy that he's doing what it is that he loves, and I just want to let him know not to stop doing it and keep pushing forward. And those times that he feels like he's down and he can't keep going, to think of it like a basketball game. And I know he hates to lose at basketball, so just keep pushing.
Well, thank you so much. Thank you so much. What was your name? What's your name?
It's Jennifer.
Okay, Jennifer, thank you so much for supporting your cousin and calling into A Touch of Grace, okay? Okay, she's cute. God, you got some support, my friend. Okay.
I really do.
So, yeah, you really do have some support, you know. And so you take that, you know, you take all of that in and know that you got some people behind you. Most certainly here at A Touch of Grace, we love Toi Irving's work, and we want to be part of his growth in any way we can. So when that other book gets ready to get published, you let me know, and then we'll go ahead and do a show based on that. And I will have the time right.
Okay.
This spring forward caught me off guard on this computer. So are there any final thoughts that you want to leave the listeners with today?
Actually, I just want to, you know, thank my wife for calling in and giving me her words, and also my cousin Jennifer, because there are times that I do feel like, you know, like I said before, that I do want to stop writing, and I do want to stop doing certain things because, as I said, it can hurt like hell, and sometimes I just don't want to go through that that pain that I get sometimes from it, but what makes me feel better about it is when I know I can make certain people feel better. I can talk about death. I can reach down and put out words that can make my mom feel better. She lost her mom back in 92, and I feel like I have a gift. I've been blessed with a gift from God that I can go in and I can tap in and I can talk to her mom, that can talk to me, and I can relay that message to her that makes her feel a certain way. And that's when I feel a whole lot better about being blessed with the gift that I have, because I can, you know, make others feel better.
So, and you are doing that.
You know, I want to thank those people. I want to thank, you know, my brother who told me, you know, I need to start writing songs, which I've started writing songs. And I want to thank my twin sister, who's always there to support me. I want to thank my mom, who's just crazy as I am. You know, thank my dad for, you know, because he writes. I learned a couple of years ago that he used to write. So I never read any of his work, but, yeah, he told me that he used to write. So a part of me feel like I've got some of that from him. So, you know, I want to thank everybody that support me. And honestly, I want to thank even more the people that don't support me, because they're my motivation. They're the people that inspire me. Those are the people I want to beat. Those are the people I want to put on the other side of it. Those are the people I want to put on the other team. So believe it or not, I get inspired by people that don't support me. I get inspired by people that think they can beat me. That's what inspires me.
When you go back and you listen to this broadcast, I want you to listen to it closely, because you've got it. You've got such a wonderful and extraordinary gift, and you've got a lot of support behind you. And once again, I just want to say thank you for doing the show. And for you listeners out there, thank you for making A Touch of Grace 30,000 strong. We have become the premium platform for artists of all walks of life, from musicians to filmmakers to novelists. We've even had people talking about their own life story. And the reason I bring people on and continue to do this is a labor of love. It's not like I'm getting paid yet. But I do it because I believe that the human race is worth it. So if you take anything away from these interviews that I do, take this away. Love yourself and know that there's somebody out there who's going to love you. There's many somebodies out there that are going to love you just for being you. So take a moment to look yourself in the mirror and say, I do love me today, all right? So this is GD. I love you right back, all right? I'll talk to you guys later. Hey, Tori, keep in touch, okay?
All right, thanks. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. All right, everybody, it's a wrap. Take care.